Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news-ad-free. That's amazon.com/news-ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Economic indicators.
Who knows where this is going to end up?
To understand the economy, you have to understand human nature.
This podcast is powered by Acast.
Are you giggly head? How are you, man?
I'm good, thanks. Very good.
It's good to know. Good to know. How are you doing there? It's David with Giggly Davis here. All is good, I hope, in your world. You're getting the Christmassy feeling. You're going out. Restaurants are open, John. Bars are open.
Pubs. Pints.
Pints are open.
Crisps. Love it.
Gastropubs. It's all ahead of us.
It's all good.
How's
it's
life?
All good. Life is good. Life is good because we're back open and we're up and running again.
And do you know what I got a phone call yesterday.
Oh?
Bernie. Bernie Sanders. He's coming on the podcast.
Is he? Brilliant.
Yeah. Brilliant. We're just going to get a slot now over
Brilliant.
The next couple
That's
of days.
Fantastic.
So it's great. And that'll be really interesting. So again, you know, years ago, Bernie came over to the book festival in Dalkey, just chatted for ages. He was really good fun.
He was.
And then he asked me to come over and be on his institute, the Sanders Institute, which is, you know, a think tank of all sorts of different punters.
Yeah.
And so I just, you know, I zapped him. I just texted him. I texted his missus, actually. And she came back and said, yeah, Bernie, love to do it.
It'd be great to get his take on, because remember we were talking a few weeks ago about how the left lost.
Yeah.
The left in America, that is. And get his take on it.
Well, why don't we do it? And also, by the way, if you're following us on Patreon and you have a question you want to ask Bernie, zap them in on Patreon the next couple of days and I will ask your question to Bernie Sanders.
Great idea. Actually, and speaking of questions, we got a question in from Troy Tyson, and he was talking about our episode last week when we were talking to Martin Lestow and all things Argentina and Maradona. He says, really good episode, lads. Thanks, Troy. Any books in Argentina that you'd recommend?
Troy, how you doing there? Yeah, this is another thing that, just so you know, on Patreon every week, we have a Q&A session and the questions come in. And what we've decided to do is answer some of those questions on air. So, Troy, how are you doing? On Argentina, culturally, if you really want to read about Argentinian culture, anything by Borges, the Argentinian Nobel Prize winning novelist, anything by him will give you a sense of...
Borges,
okay? will give you a sense of deep Argentinian culture, which, again, as Martin was saying, is this layered upon layered upon layered of immigrants who came in various different waves. So it is a fascinating story. But on the economics, Troy, I'll tell you, the best book to understand all those dynamics on Argentina and how it all came to a head in the 1990s and the massive, massive crisis they had in 2001 is The Return of Depression Economics by Paul Krugman. It's a lovely little book. Again, Krugman writes beautifully. It's a short book. It's 130-odd pages. And there's a fantastic description of the trap, the monetary trap that Argentina finds itself in. And it feeds off a chapter on Mexico and a chapter on Brazil. It's a lovely little book. So have a read of that. Paul Krugman, you know, winner of the Nobel Prize for Economics. You know all that. The Return of Depression Economics.
There's also a great movie called The Motorcycle Diaries. Actually, I haven't watched it in a while.
Che Guevara.
It's about Che Guevara before he became kind of the Che Guevara, going around with his buddy, basically on a road trip.
Yeah.
And kind of looking at
Argentina.
Oh, man, I'd love to do
that. On a motorbike.
Yeah.
And Vespas. Yeah. Because that's Tremor like mods. The best way.
A fair twanky car, actually.
By the way, we're going to have this Q&A every second week. So again, support us on Patreon. You're going to miss out if you're not in. And zap your questions in there. And again, what I was saying, just a special one for Christmas is questions for Bernie.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST. burrow.com/ACAST.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
What's on your mind, my friend?
Anyway.
Mr. Angry on the 7A.
Yeah, there I am. Actually, there was a great episode, brilliant interview with your man, Andy Haldane, on Tuesday. Now, let's pick up on a few of his points because they were very interesting.
Yeah, they were good.
Particularly, like, there's loads of stuff and we can go over them all, but we'd be here for hours. But I'm particularly interested in this whole concept of meritocracy and the tyranny of meritocracy. This is all a relatively new concept for me, first highlighted on this podcast when talking about how the Democrats went wrong and where they went wrong in the States. And I started thinking about that going, well, yeah, I can actually see that. But then Andy was talking about the tyranny of meritocracy as well. And yeah, it makes a huge amount of sense. But let's talk about that a bit.
It's kind of counterintuitive. Like, so Andy was talking about it in the context of Brexit.
Mm.
He's trying to find out straws in the wind as to, he sets out, like, there was income inequality in the UK, generational inequality in the UK, and what he called spatial or geographical inequality. So basically you have rich and poor, young and old, north versus south, those big divides.
Yeah.
And he says, on top of that, is a resentment on the part of one part of society against another, right?
Yeah.
And this is, I think, the coming battle in democracies. And it is between the meritocracy, people who believe, and let's put it this, people who believe they're special, right?
Yeah.
That they are the special ones. So the sort of Mourinhos of the professional classes, the special ones, right? And what he's saying is that he goes back to a book, and I think we might have even mentioned this book. It's by Michael Young, right? And Michael Young was a Labour Party.
Yeah, we did at one of the episodes.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, yeah.
If you follow English journalism, Toby Young, I think, is his son, who is an English columnist and an opinion maker. Anyway, this book was written. It's extraordinary when you think about it, right? So the book is called The Rise of the Meritocracy. Now, most people, John, believe meritocracy, okay, you get there on merit. That's good, right?
Yeah, it's good.
Okay. But he's saying this book was written in the 50s. Now, this is what makes it so interesting, right? This book was written in 1958. So
right.
A long time ago, right? And what it was a warning from the future. So he positioned the book in 2030. And he said, be warned that a meritocratic class is going to emerge. This is the class of winners. It's like the SWAT class, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And they are going to run the society. And merit, he said, was IQ plus effort equals merit. So think about this, right? In the context of our Leaving Cert, right? IQ, not EQ, not emotional intelligence, not soft skills, hard IQ plus effort equals merit. And the people who get to the very top of society based on this equation, the doctors, the lawyers, the economists, all these sort of professional classes become the top of society. And he was saying this, what they were worried about in the UK. So this is 1958. So they're all socialists, all the Labour Party guys, right? Of various hues. And the Socialist Party, the Labour Party in England, has always been a very broad church.
Yeah.
So you'd have like Marxists on the one side and then kind of left of centre, wishy-washy liberals on the other side. So it's big, big church, right? But they're trying to figure out what, and imagine that Britain's going through the end of empire and it's going through the end of the aristocracy. And they're thinking, okay, for hundreds of years, land dominated. If you had land in a feudal system, you became the aristocrat and you became the boss, right?
Yeah.
So that was the way. And then during the Industrial Revolution, the class that emerged at the top were the merchant class, the industrious class, right? And then, of course, in England, it was complemented by the fact that they had what I would call the empire class, the people who went out to India and robbed the kip, right? Or came out here and robbed the kip, right? So these three sort of quite well-defined hierarchies, and also hierarchies that understood that their success was in part luck, in part circumstantial,
and in part in the circumstance of their birth.
And yes, exactly. Right place at the right time, right? So he's thinking, Young is talking about the new class that's going to come is not an aristocracy, it's a meritocracy. And this new class is going to be defined by their educational achievements.
Mm.
And that's what Andy's talking about. So you basically get societies run by PhDs, right? Now, the problem for this, and this is really deep, is that if you get to the top based on merit, on your own perception,
right,
that you're special, that you deserve it, two things happen, John. One is you're unlikely to have much empathy for people who don't, because you can justify to yourself, well, I got here because I merited. I'm the special one.
Yeah.
And I worked hard.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah, yeah,
and I worked hard. So I was bequeathed with this IQ and then I worked my ass off.
Yeah.
And now I have everything. So if you're on the top and you're unempathetic, that's very dangerous. And he makes a point, it's very interesting in the book, Michael Young makes the point, is that the aristocracy, right, kind of knew, like if you're a chinless wonder, right?
and red trousers.
And red trousers, yeah, exactly. And a blazer, right? Right, yeah, that it was you're right. So in a way, they have this, remember what the Tory party in England had, which is this one nation idea, that we're kind of jammy because we're aristocrats.
Yeah.
And consequently, ours, the noblesse oblige, is that the...
That
the noble, they have some obligation to the state, right? Because they just got lucky, right? Yeah. So in a way, the aristocracy had some sort of notion of luck, right? But what he's saying is that, and of course, the industrialists had notion of luck as well, because they understood dynamics between workers and innovation and all that stuff. And the colonialists thought, well, we're the jammiest of all. We just happen to be born in the country that owns the world, right?
Yeah.
So they had a much more integrated view of the society and the role of luck. Now, if you have an aristocracy that emerges called a meritocracy, where there's no luck, as far as they're concerned.
It's all hard work.
It's all hard work
and
natural ability. What you find then is one thing is they don't have the empathy for the people below them. But the people below them, the people who fail in society, therefore, feel it's my fault. Because if it's a meritocracy and I didn't get there on my own merit, there's something wrong with me.
Yeah.
And that breeds a seething, seething resentment. Now, the best way to look at this is through the lens of our mate Tom Frank. Okay.
Absolutely, yeah. He was talking about this. And the thing is that America is the ultimate in meritocracy. You know, it's all the American dream is based on anybody can do it if you work hard enough, if you get that education, you get the SATs or whatever they call them over there, and you get into university and work hard. You know, you can be president.
Well, it worked for Donnie.
But as Donnie said, I love the uneducated.
Well, this is the point, right? So if you think about the Democratic Party, and I'm going to talk about it here because Fine Gael is the meritocratic party here.
Yeah.
And it's a very dangerous position that they find themselves in. And I think they're going to have to dance around that particular pin to try and embrace something broader. Okay, but back to it. The Hillary Clinton Democrats allied with three extraordinary parts of America, right? The Democratic Party became the party of merit. Right?
Yeah.
Andy was talking about Tony Blair having the Labour Party. New Labour was a meritocratic project.
But
the Clinton Democrats were one. So the Clinton Democrats decided, you know, this working class base we have, Irish, Italian workers, you know, in the cities, we're going to forget them and we're going to become the party of hedge fund managers. So Hillary Clinton, basically, in her last 3 days, it was an alliance between Wall Street, the Democratic Party, Wall Street, Silicon Valley and Hollywood,
Yes. Right? Yeah.
So you know all these like movie stars. Now, if you're looking at someone like George Clooney, for example, it's an out of this world proposition for the average dude to think I can be like him. No, you can't, right?
If you're
looking at a hedge fund manager, a billionaire, again, it's like this is not your world. Or if you're looking at the guys from Google supporting the Democrat Party, you know, you're thinking, well, this is not my world. So suddenly the meritocracy that the Democrats involve themselves in becomes the elite, John. And this is then the narrative.
Mm.
That's the elite who are supporting these guys. And we, the people, the average guy left behind, is left behind. And as I've always said, John, people in a democracy might not have a stake, but they have a vote.
Yeah.
This is the balancing. This is the great balancing of democracy. Has a vote. And they vote with Brexit and they vote against, you know, the elites. And that's what happens.
It's the as you're saying, the brewing resentment of the non-university students.
It's the non-university. But it's even getting, if you look at it even in Ireland, John, right? There's a huge now hierarchy in universities, between the various universities. It's not just good enough to go to university. The points race in Ireland and the Leaving Cert structure reinforces the meritocracy all the time. So kids are getting this idea of merit being driven into them at a very young age. Now, and the kids who don't do well in school, who go to school but are falling behind for no fault of their own in many cases, they feel really resentful of the annual jamboree. You know, it's great to celebrate people's intelligence, but this idea of photographs in the Irish papers of somebody get 500 points or 600 points, you know, so what you're doing is you're, not only are you celebrating it, but in celebrating that type of brain, you're penalizing the other people. You're saying you are not meritorious of this.
And it's a tricky one though, because...
It is a tricky one.
You know, you have to, like if somebody works hard and does well, you know, fair play to you. But, you know, we got to be careful. It's a very fine line because you don't go to university. That's not as in your fault. It's not wrong. It's not bad. It's just a different path. So I think we got to be very careful about creating this. It kind of tears society apart in many ways.
Oh, yeah.
You know, the haves and have-nots is not based purely on money. It's based on education.
I tell you what we'll do. We'll divide it into this, what I call them is the exam passing class.
Yes. Okay. That might be a better way of putting it. Yeah.
That's what we're talking about. So there is a class that can pass exams. And, you know, I'm in it. I was good at exams, right? Okay, so it's an exam passing class. If the exam passing class gets to the top and they're defined by their ability to pass exams, which is what actually is the issue, then what you do is you overburden that class with the responsibility for people who are not good at passing exams.
We've often talked before about how brains develop differently at different stages and different speeds.
Absolutely. And also some incredibly agile, brilliant, dynamic brains just don't get exams.
Yeah,
you know,
they just
don't get them. Like, I mean,
absolutely.
You meet, and I mean, certainly, you know, I know this in this family because of Lucy's dyslexia. She just she looked at me like exams. She's like, "What's this all about, man?
Yeah,
I want to sing for a living.
Yeah.
I don't want to quote Shakespeare. That's not for me." And you could see her head going, "Man,
yeah."
So what you have is you have this extraordinary cleavage between the exam passing class and the rest. But what it does on societal levels is it bequeaths status to certain individuals and denies status for others.
Yeah.
And that's the fundamental issue, I think, because everybody wants to count. Everybody, the whole sense of being a human being is that I am here. I can make a difference. I am an important person. I have something to say. And if you rob people of status and you rob people of the right to communicate that, and you say, well, in actual fact, you're a second-rate citizen. Why? Because you didn't do your Leaving Cert and go on and do a master's and yada, yada, yada. And actually, John, it's very old, this.
Go on.
Let's go to Aristotle.
Why not?
Do you remember I was talking to you about Plato and Aristotle last week?
Yes.
Right?
Okay. The Socratical.
The Socratic way of talking, right?
The Socratic way of talking.
But the Greeks' whole idea, Greek philosophy, is this idea of know thyself. Who am I?
Yeah.
Who am I, the deep person, right? But their idea was also this idea of the polity, right? Of the citizen, of the informed citizen, right? And at the informed citizen was somebody who believed in the common good. And this is what, I'll read you some stuff, right? You know, the critical thing for societies, John, is this notion. And Aristotle's Politics is a defense of the values that make the citizen at the center of society.
Mm.
And those values are all about common values, community values. So the good citizen in Greece was a virtuous person, wasn't a swotty person. That was a characteristic, but it wasn't a value. And I can tell you something that's always struck me about the difference. I might have talked to you before about between resume qualities, CV qualities, and eulogy qualities. I've been ever noticed at funerals. As we get older, John, I'm more...
Yes, we go to more and more.
Yeah, but what I'm interested in is what people say about you at your funeral and what you put on your LinkedIn page. Okay? Listen to me, right?
So I don't have first-hand experience of this.
Right, okay. Of neither. Right, but if you think of what you put, people put on their LinkedIn page, the qualities that they project, I'm assertive. I'm a very good executor.
Yeah.
I'm single-minded. I am driven. I am ambitious. Yeah. Think about it. And there are all these qualities that we say, ooh, I like that. Yeah. That sort of
but I have many hobbies too.
Many hobbies, right? But think about it. Single-minded, task-orientated.
Yeah. It's good.
Focused, driven, ambitious, right? So they're the CV virtues. But then when we die, what do people say about us? They say, was he kind? Was he decent? Was she a good person?
Good point,
Was she generous? Right? So if you, nobody gets up in mass in church and says, he was driven. Do you know what I mean?
Like, he was very tasked.
He was very tasked. That's John Davis. Do you know what I mean? Like the priest is there, the vicar or whatever.
And he was good in the team, but also he was good as an individual.
He was good as, exactly. But that idea, you know, that, you know, he was ambitious.
Yeah.
You don't get up and say, your man who's freaking warm in the grave, he was ambitious. What you say is, so the qualities that we like to be remembered by, these are quite different from the qualities that we project in life, right? And the Greeks were all about citizen, generous, decent, kind, soft ideas, you know, giving his or her time to other people, helping people, being a good presence, a good spirit, a good, having good vibes around them, right? Funny. Witty, you know, these are the things that we say about people when they die. And I think that the problem with the meritocracy is it takes those LinkedIn characteristics and elevates them as being the be-all and end-all. And it denigrates the very characteristics that humans want to be actually remembered by. And this is a conflict.
But that was the whole idea of universities in the first place, wasn't it? It wasn't to be driven and to...
Task-orientated
and points. It wasn't all about points. It was about kind of self-exploration.
Yeah.
It was about understanding, broadening your mind.
Yeah.
I always see...
Think of the word universe.
Yeah.
Like where did the university come from?
Yeah.
It's the word. It's the universe. It's out there. It's the great thing. That's where it comes from.
Yeah.
So to try and create a universal person. Whereas you're absolutely right. What a lot of universities now are to create, what I call them sometimes, some academics that I'd meet, they're really nice people, but they end up knowing more and more about less and less.
Yeah, well, that's it.
And they end up knowing everything about nothing at the end. So my specialist is, you know, that's why I always think in economics, you should have more GPs and less brain surgeons.
Yeah.
You know, you're generalists. You say, I can figure that. But, you know, even if you think of, you know, there's a thing in academia called peer-reviewed papers.
Yeah.
Right? Which is the be-all and end-all. And you end up hyper-specializing. So not only do you move away from the universe idea, you actually go to the microscopic. And you end up being a microscopic person rather than a universal
person. Quantum level.
Yeah, exactly.
But myself and JM were talking about this earlier, and he used the phrase or he used the expression of, you used to go to university to learn, to grow, to broaden your mind, all the rest. Now you go to university to optimize yourself. It's about efficiency. It's about kind of doing the best you can. I always look at these kind of things, use the analogy of trees and forests. You know, if you have people packed together, you know, competing like conifer forests, you tend to get very straight, narrow trunks, tall trees. Whereas you look at an oak tree that grows slowly, but is much rounder and bigger, just kind of represents...
and more beautiful.
And more beautiful. Just represents that kind of... that difference between the optimization in university and the self-exploration and, you know, broadening the mind.
So that we should say, so I don't think you're right. I like the metaphors. We're good at metaphors today. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So universities should be called microversities.
Yes, yeah.
Universities, but microversities. You know, really, they should. And the other point is a lot of people do university courses in order to maximize the income they think they're going to get by that credential, that piece of paper.
Yeah.
And it's, I mean, we're into all sorts of other stuff. Credentialism, this idea that people are mandated by somebody else, by the credentials somebody gives you.
That's right. Right?
And that again, so if you don't have the credentials, you're not allowed to speak.
Yeah, I see this on Twitter all the time. It just amazes me.
What?
And well, no, you know, if somebody, you can see people putting in their name and their handles, doctor.
PhD.
Or, yeah, MD or whatever.
Oh, it's like, get out of here. No, but the danger is then, John, the other danger is that we flip to the other extreme, which is that we decide to denigrate real skill and expertise, right?
Yeah.
Because you need experts as well. You know, like we talked about the vaccine. You need people who understand DNA to make that stuff. So, and again, this is the there's another book on this, John. There's another book just doing the rounds now. JM's reading at the moment, which is a guy called Michael Sandel. It's called The Tyranny of Merit, What's Become of the Common Good. And he's a Harvard professor. Mm. Same idea. But it's like everything, John, it's a balance. So on the one hand, you've got to continue to treat experts and value their expertise. And you only become expert in something with huge amounts of commitment and hard work.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
But then you've got to also value the generalist. And it's that idea. And how you do this is you make sure that you're not always celebrating the expert and you're not always suggesting the expert has all the answers. Mm. Because what we do know, certainly from sociology and anthropology and psychology and all these things, is that the narrower the field from which you take your decisions, the more likely those decisions are going to be wrong. Because it's the wisdom of crowds, not the madness of crowds.
There is
a huge wisdom in crowds.
Yeah.
You know, crowds tend to come to the right solution.
And actually, just one last point on the dangers of this meritocracy also is this, as we were describing before, is the resentment on the bottom and the lack of empathy on the top. That in itself is the root of populism.
Well, exactly. And the rise of populism, particularly in the States and particularly in the UK.
Yeah.
Right. And in the States and the UK, it was the difference between people from somewhere and people from anywhere. So if you think of the educated class are by definition quite footloose. So they might have more in common with a similar person in Sweden or Denmark or Texas than they have with their neighbor.
Mm.
Okay. So these are people who can live anywhere. They're the cosmopolitan class. And then there's the class of people who define themselves like, I'm from Kerry, I play Ga, this is my home, this is the type of person I'm. I'm a Kerry man, or I'm a Dub, or I'm the people who define themselves by their locality. And you have this other conflict in populism, John, going on between the cosmopolitan class and the anchored or geographically permanent class. And that's very evident in the UK, where you're like, I'm from the north of England and you're from the south of England. So people who define themselves by their... People who derive status from credentials are the meritocrats, the top of the tree. And there's other people who derive status from the place they were born. That's the type of person I am. But Tom Frank, remember Tom?
Yeah, I do. He was brilliant.
Should get Tom on.
Brilliant. Everyone loved him, actually.
He's great. But he argues, and this is a quote about Tom, and Tom's books, not just Kansas. There's a great one called Listen, Liberal, Why Liberals Don't Listen.
Right?
Because he's saying, it's the same, the elite, I'm not going to listen to you because I know everything.
Yeah.
And he's talking about Frank. It says, Frank argued that all the education talk distracted the Democrats from thinking clearly about the policies that had led to inequality. Noting that productivity rose during the 1980s and the 1990s, but wages did not. So in economics, wages should rise with productivity. If they're not, somebody else is making money. Frank doubted that inequality was due mainly to the failure in education. And the quote is, the real problem was one of inadequate worker power, not inadequate worker smarts. So what he was saying is that the problem in America was the trade unions couldn't leverage themselves into a position of power because they had been destroyed by Reagan. But the Democrats, rather than reverse what Reagan did, went along with that because they thought, again, we're the special people and the average guy didn't get a look in. Good stuff.
Yeah. And actually, do you know, that's a point that we should talk to Bernie about when we have him on.
Yeah. I think the questions of Bernie would be long and many.
Yeah. And he'll stand up for every answer. Do you remember?
He did yes, that. I did. You might have thought it was funny. I was the guy sitting on stage.
Yeah, it was weird. Every time he was asked a question, he'd stand up.
He'd ask a question by me.
Yeah.
And then he'd get up and talk to everyone else. And I'm sitting there like a spare prig at a wedding thinking, what am I going to do here? There's 3,000 people looking at me. What do I do?
But anyway, Andy, like, he spoke about that, and that was a really interesting area. Yeah. But he also spoke about lots of other stuff. Like, I really liked his take on banking crisis. In actual fact, he summed up banking crisis in about 30 seconds, as he says himself. Have a listen to this.
Could we see technology unbundle banks? You know, we've had now for about, you know, 800 years, we've bundled together in something called a bank, a bunch of money on the liability side and loans on the asset side of a bank's balance sheet. Now, with hindsight, that was a slightly odd thing to have done, wasn't it? Because money is immediate and its value is certain, and loans are long-term and their value is very uncertain.
Yeah, they're just IOUs.
They're just IOUs. So there's a historical big mismatch between the characteristics of the liability side of the bank's balance sheet, money, and the asset side, loans. And that's why we have banking crises, and that's why we have banking regulation. I've just explained banking crises and banking regulation in 30 seconds in terms of the stapling together of two slightly odd things.
Proper teacher there, John. Proper teacher.
Yeah.
Gets to the core of the issue, says, this is the thing. Let's come back to that, because banking crisis, they ain't going away, and we know all about it.
We're not going away.
I'm trying to get you out of the house.
But there's loads of other stuff that he was talking about.
The crypto stuff is interesting. You know, we missed the trick, of course.
Yes, of course we did. Of course we did.
1st of September.
We're all
Bitcoin at 11. We're all talking. 11,000 is now 19. Yeah. And we're even poorer than we started.
Yeah. Exactly.
And you have no money for the Christmas presents.
And the other one that we should come back to as well is, we said the banking crisis, but his whole take on technology and culture, I think that was a really interesting one.
Yeah, no, absolutely. You know, and we will come back. And the good thing is that we are both appalling at technology and we have no culture. There you go. See you next week. I know you're sitting there worried about what you're going to give that person you love for Christmas. Give them the gift of knowledge with the Dave McWilliams podcast. We're going to give you, for December only, a full year's membership with a 15% discount. So for that person you love, who loves economics, loves learning, loves the crack, loves all this carry on, Dave McWilliams podcast, Christmas special present, patreon.com/Dave McWilliams.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.